broadcasting around the entire world. From Austin, Texas, via Simplecast, and supported by listeners like you. Bitcoin, billions, stellar, trading, mining, markets, FUD, sharing, forks, millions, fights, wise. Keeping you up to date on everything crypto. Welcome to Thriller News. Now here is your host, Carr Gonzalez.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls from around the world. Welcome to another episode of Thriller News. I'm your host, Carr Gonzalez. That's right. Today is January 21st, 2019. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. And with that, let's jump into the crypto top stories.
Crypto top stories.
Okay, today's first crypto top story. Let's start with the bad. I like to get the bad out of the way. Today is coming from Cointelegraph. So Bitcoin's problems are only solvable by departing from a proof-of-work system. And this is according to a research published by the Bank for International Settlements. That's right. They did this on January 21st. And according to the paper, when in the future Bitcoin's block rewards fall to zero, given that only a limited number of new Bitcoin will ever be created, transaction fees alone will not be able to sustain mining expenses. This argument implies that the Bitcoin network would become so slow that it would be virtually unusable. They stated from this research report that simple calculations suggest that once block rewards are zero, it could take months before Bitcoin's payment is final, unless new technologies are deployed to speed up payment finality. The study further notes that while secondary solutions like the Lightning Network could help, the only fundamental remedy would be to depart from proof of work. Such a departure, according to the report, would probably require some form of social coordination or institutionalization. And the document's overall conclusion, and this is according to their research, that in the digital age, good money is likely to remain a social construct rather than a purely technological one. Switzerland-based BIS is an organization consisting of 60 central banks, which reportedly account for 95% of global GDP. All right, let's get into our next piece of news. Now, this is the news I like. Bitcoin transferred more than $3 trillion, that's right, in value last year. Okay, according to Satoshi Capital Research, they shared some statistics of Bitcoin's performance in 2018 compared to previous years. According to Bitcoin's total traded volume for 2018, it is $2.2 trillion, which is more than traded volume of the Bulgarian lev and right behind the Chilean peso. It's almost four times the volume traded in 2017, which was $858 billion. What's more than that, the transferred value is denominated in USD terms. Therefore, the declining price of 2018 should also be taken into account. Meanwhile, the total on-chain transaction volume was $3.2 trillion in 2018, which doesn't even include second layer Lightning Network that quickly grew to more than 5,200 nodes and over 19,000 channels by the end of last year, respectfully. Additionally, the Bitcoinists jumped in and they recently reported that Bitcoin transactions have hit a yearly high of 325,000 confirmed daily transactions. Back in 2017, only about 10% of Bitcoin payments were made using the segregated witness protocol. This number has increased substantially in 2018 as SegWit transactions comprise 40% of all transactions carried out on Bitcoin's network. That's right. Satoshi Capital Research makes a point that the above fact solidifies the position of Bitcoin as a global currency, with BTC now seeing greater volumes than the Argentinian peso and the Bulgarian lev. And then also, you know, I think it's fascinating how quickly Bitcoin has slowly taken over the world as not only a store of value, because some people perceive it that way, but also, this is a great payment rail, right? I mean, think about it, ladies and gentlemen. We're close. You know, these banks are trying to do anything and everything they can, and I love it. What does Pomp say? He says, long Bitcoin, short the bankers. Yeah, I would agree. With that, let's go ahead and jump into today's crypto rapid fire.
Crypto rapid fire, just in case you missed it.
All right, first up, we got Spanish Port Authority joins blockchain platform developed by IBM. That's right. The Port Authority of one of Europe's busiest ports has reportedly signed an agreement under which it will collaborate with IBM on a blockchain-based shipping platform. That's right. The Bay of Algeciras, I'm sorry if I screwed that up, has signed an agreement under which it will collaborate with IBM on its shipping platform, Tradelens Europa, news reported on January 21st. That's right. Tradelens is a digital platform based on blockchain technology developed by both IBM and the international shipping giant Maersk. And Aerolus, can't pronounce that, is one of the top 10 busiest ports in Europe. Way to go. Next up, we have Bank of England advisor says cryptocurrencies fail basic financial tests. Here we go again. Senior advisor to a Bank of England governor, Mark Carney, said that cryptocurrencies are slow, they lack value, and they fail basic financial tests. His senior advisor to the Bank of England, that's right, Hugh von Steenis, said that having previously worked at Schroders and Morgan Stanley, I'm not so worried about cryptocurrencies. They fail the basic tests of financial services. They're not a great unit of exchange. They don't hold value and they're slower. Gotta love that stuff. Okay, and our last piece of news, that's right, TV show on cryptocurrencies. Yeah, it's happening, and it's happening on HBO. What could either be a big boost to legitimacy of cryptocurrencies or a big old bust? Kevin Connolly, the star of Entourage, will be starring in a new TV show titled Cryptos. That's right. The show finally sees the light of day. Eyeballs are guaranteed, not only for the actor, but for the subject that has for long excited and confused a lot of people in equal measure. According to Kevin, he says, the thing that scares people about crypto is a lack of understanding. People like myself are still learning, but the curiosity is there. The TV show's official synopsis suggests that the show will be a story of four friends who turned to trading on cryptocurrency market to bankroll their movies after being unable to find big producers who can do so. Kevin Connolly also participated in the project and will also extend to the director's chair. He will be joined on the project by leading blockchain advocates Jason King and Eric Swords. The world of cryptocurrencies and blockchain technologies has never been visible, they said. It comes to popular culture, and this can be attributed to several reasons, ranging from it being a subject matter beyond the public's understanding of the fear of being duped by participation. Ultimately, if cryptos can hope to do what HBO Silicon Valley did, then, you know, this could be big. I mean, if done right. Yeah, if done right, could bring the brand visibility we need. What's that sound? Oh, that's right. Crypto YouTube. Let's do it.
Crypto YouTube. The world of crypto YouTube. The world of crypto YouTube. The world of crypto YouTube.
Okay, so this crypto YouTube video has been making the rounds in YouTube, right? And I just found out about this yesterday. But what's interesting is this was released back in October of last year, and it didn't really, you know, I don't know. It's just strange because this is everything we all know. We just haven't been able to put the pieces together. It's called the Great Crypto Conspiracy. Check this out.
It's a huge transfer of wealth that's happening right now. The last time I saw something like this was back during 1994 to 1995. In the early to mid 90s, individuals were making just enormous amounts of money buying companies like Dell, AOL, Microsoft, Netscape, and some of these smaller internet stocks. And the institutions had completely missed that bull market. And so they were scoffing at these so-called lemmings. And so during 1994 to 1995, we had a bit of a bear market. And so, again, institutions were out saying that, oh, anybody buying internet stocks, you're idiotic. And so you had a lot of people selling their AOL, selling their Microsoft, selling their Dell shares. Guess who was buying? It was the institutions. If you look at a chart of institutional allocation to venture capital internet deals. It doubled between 1994 to 1995, which was exactly when institutions were saying, oh, this is just a market for idiots. Mm-hmm. Nobody should be buying this stuff. Mm-hmm. So they literally stole all this wealth that should have been in the hands of individuals that owned Dell, Microsoft, and AOL. And then from 1995 to 2000, of course, you know, we saw $5 trillion come into the market in the biggest bull market we've ever seen. So this blueprint of creating fear in order to get cheap prices is nothing new. So
you know, hang on just a second before you go on.
Yeah.
This one is really important to me because the housing crisis, those banks, they bought up all of those houses. They were the ones who caused the problem.
Right.
Then they were talking everything down and saying, I'm just taking the I'm taking the junk off the table.
Yeah.
That's not junk now.
It's not junk. But not when it's dropped 40 to 60%, it's not junk. So this happened between 2011, 2012. Blackstone Group buys 50,000 homes. But during this period of time, the regular individual couldn't get a mortgage, right? It was virtually impossible to get a mortgage during this time, exactly when institutions were buying. And then the dot-com crash in 2003. If you can go back and look at old CNBC clips during 2003, even as the market was starting to come up, oh, don't buy tech stocks. No, they're evil. Don't buy tech stocks. Don't buy tech stocks. But institutions, if you looked at the 10Ks, the Qs, and all of the filings, the quarterly filings, they were all loading up
on tech. This is how the rich get richer.
Yes.
They know. They're connected. A lot of times they're coordinating without the insider trading. This is not illegal to do.
No. Manipulating the news cycle, if you're smart about it, is they can get away with it. Nobody's ever been arrested for anything like this.
So now with crypto, I know personally, I know people that would have gotten in or stayed in if these people weren't saying what they're saying.
Right. And so this has really been extremely egregious. So on September 12th, Jamie Dimon says Bitcoin is a fraud. He says he'll fire anyone of his traders buying Bitcoin. Bitcoin drops 24%. When Jamie Dimon speaks,
people listen.
People listen. So that weekend, we found out that the largest buyer of a Bitcoin fund that's in Europe that buys physical Bitcoin, right? The largest buyer was Morgan Stanley and JP Morgan. And that's not illegal.
He says it's a fraud.
Says he'd fire anyone
that
buys it. Yes.
And at the same time, his company is buying
His company is buying it.
So it's just, I mean, so unethical.
Right.
Okay, George Soros.
George Soros, in January 24th, price was already down, calls Bitcoin a bubble, says Bitcoin is the worst, you know, the worst investment in the world. Don't buy Bitcoin. Don't buy Bitcoin. Basically throws gasoline on the fire at this point. And then what do we find out? So he says bubble here.
It drops 44%.
Right. And then here in April, 2 months later, guess what we find out?
Yeah.
His $26 billion family office has approval to buy cryptocurrency.
Right. And we only knew about it publicly.
Right.
Here. And this is the kind of thing that George Soros is famous for this, talking the sterling down.
Yeah.
And what did he do? He stole the pensions of all the little people.
Yeah, made a billion.
Yeah. Okay.
So then here now, Goldman Sachs, this again, February 7th, most cryptocurrencies will crash to zero. Now, I remember when they said this in February, and I had, through my network, I knew that Goldman Sachs was setting up a crypto trading desk. Absolutely knew they were setting up a crypto trading desk.
And I remember you telling me that.
Right. And then, of course, they were denying it. No, we're not. Price falls down 27%. And then what do we find out? We find out here, they say BTC zero. And then we find out just before May, new trading desk. Not only that, they put $400 million to buy a cryptocurrency trading platform. Okay, so February 7th, it's all going to zero. May, we just spent $400 million just on a flyer.
And they're not the only ones.
No. So you have a lot of institutions that are coming. You had Christine Lagarde from the IMF come out And this was, what's funny about this, Glenn, is it was all around the same time. It was almost like the, I can't prove collusion, but you know, it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck.
And you know what?
It's probably a duck.
The people, they all hang out together, they all think alike. It doesn't have to be calling each other.
Yeah.
They just, they know this game.
Yes. So IMF, Christine Lagarde says in the first part of the year, says all central banks should band together against cryptocurrency.
Right.
Have you ever heard her say all banks should band together against illegal arms?
No.
Or illegal drugs?
No.
Or human trafficking?
No.
No. But this nascent asset class, we must all join arms against.
This, what this did was play into people's heads that these guys are never going to let Bitcoin survive.
Right.
And so people thought, this is over.
Selling. Yeah.
So let me show you. Can we show a chart of the five crashes? This is from, I think,
last year, right?
Last year.
Yeah.
Okay. So do we have that chart of the five crashes of Bitcoin?
Right. Was 30%. Right. Was, I think four of them were 30%, and one was 40%.
And this is, here it is. Explain this chart. Those are Amazon crashes.
Here okay, so these are Amazon.
Do you have Bitcoin?
Yeah, we need the Bitcoin chart.
We are
all right,
so
they'll come up later.
Okay.
Yeah. So what I want to talk about now is one of the key lessons I learned from being involved in the market so long is rather than listening to what people are saying, look at what they are doing.
Correct.
So this is what we should look at, and this is what I want people to focus on now. Billionaire hedge fund manager Stephen Cohen, who's worth between $12 to $14 billion, by far the smartest hedge fund manager in the world, I would say of the last century, is buying Bitcoin. $6,800 buying Bitcoin. Mark Lazary, Avenue Capital Group, worth about $1.7 billion, has put 1% of his net worth into Bitcoin at around this price, $7,500. Andreessen Horowitz.
Mark Andreessen.
That's right, Mark Andreessen. An early investor in Airbnb, Skype, Facebook, just launched a $300 million fund. Wellington Capital, they have $1 trillion in assets, are starting to get involved in Bitcoin futures. Susquehanna, the 12th largest trading firm by volume, they now have their own Bitcoin custody department, their own trading department, and they're trading Bitcoin and Ethereum. Goldman Sachs, this new CEO, David Solomon, the most pro-Bitcoin slash cryptocurrency guy on Wall Street. The most pro
Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs. He's the new CEO. He's coming into power shortly. BlackRock, this announcement just came out. The world's biggest asset manager. Now, last year, Larry Fink says, oh, you know what cryptocurrency and Bitcoin's good for?
Yeah.
Money laundering and drug dealers.
Right.
Right. So, again, if you look at what he's saying, you're going to sell your Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
You're going to say, oh, this is all BS. But guess what is happening now? They're going to launch an ETF. They're looking at an exchange-traded fund that will allow you, allow anybody with a brokerage firm to make it as easy as hitting a buy button to go out and buy Bitcoin. So you've got to look at this preponderance of evidence, right? All these people are already wealthy. All these people care about their reputation. If Bitcoin is such a trashy asset, why are all these people getting involved?
Yeah, such a fascinating listen on that. I highly recommend you check out the YouTube video. I'll put a link in the show notes. But a lot of the stuff that we cover here on the news day to day, it's not hard to keep track of. It's just like you hear it, but you never really kind of put it together and see how it looks from a whole, right? And we all knew this stuff, like, because we talk about it all the time. But to actually hear him say it out loud and kind of confirm the stuff we already know, but just haven't been able to put it in that kind of language, I don't know. It's a great skill. And Tika, if you're listening, awesome research. Awesome research. Okay, with that, we got to jump into crypto Twitter. That's right. There's some interesting stuff going on crypto Twitter today. I have to explain, but it involves the ETF. Let's do it.
Crypto Twitter. Crypto Twitter.
Okay, so this is from Jake Chervinsky. He is a lawyer, but he says he's not yours. He's a government enforcement, defense, and securities litigation lawyer, And he says, tweets do not represent my firm and are not legal or financial advice. So take that in consideration while you hear his tweets. So he says, the VanEck SolidX Bitcoin ETF won't be automatically approved just because the U.S. government is shut down. I've seen a lot of confusion and misinformation about how the shutdown affects the SEC and its process for handling ETF proposals. I'll try to explain better here. And then he starts a thread. He says, as you probably know, the SEC's final deadline to approve or deny the ETF is February 27th. That's 240 days after the ETF proposal was first published in the Federal Register. And then he goes on to link that. But he says that the 240-day deadline is imposed by federal statute 15 U.S.C. blah, 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 to be exact. Because the deadline is statutory, the shutdown doesn't affect it at all. The law continues to apply whether the government is funded or not. He also says that the SEC doesn't have the power to extend the 240-day deadline. He says the statute absolutely prohibits any further delays. By law, that means if the SEC fails to make a decision by the February 27th deadline, the ETF will be automatically approved. Go figure. He says, from these facts alone, the following narrative has emerged. The SEC might be shut down longer than February 27th deadline, which means the SEC might not decide by the deadline, in which case ETF will be approved. But he says that's extremely unlikely. He says, it is true that the SEC has stopped nearly all of its work due to the shutdown and furloughed most of its employees. They have to stay home. That includes the majority of staff members in the Division and Trading and Markets, which handles proposed rule changes. He also says, but the SEC still has a small number of staff members available to handle accepted functions, which mostly refers to urgent law enforcement matters, but also includes activities necessary for a short period in order to ensure an orderly shutdown of operations. He says that the SEC has already taken action during the shutdown and to avoid missing deadlines on other proposed rule changes. For example, on January 9th, the SEC issued an order extending the January 10th deadline on a rule change proposed by the NASDAQ FLX. So we know the SEC has a skeleton crew handling proposed rule changes, he says, during the shutdown. If the shutdown continues until February 27th, that same crew should be around to issue an order approving or denying the ETF. The better question is whether anyone's around to write it. Man, fascinating read. Thank you so much, Jake, for providing Crypto Twitter today. Okay, it's time for Coin 360. Let's do it.
Crypto 360 weather report.
All right, so the coin market cap is at $119 billion. So it's still stagnant from yesterday, no matter how much good news comes out. Bitcoin is currently at $3,577. We got XRP at 31 cents, Ethereum at 117. We got Bitcoin Cash at 122, and EOS rounding out the top five at $2.36. If you look at 24-hour change, Bulgari coin is 108% up for the day. We got Factum also up 22% at $7. Mixin, $111, up 12%. And we, of course, we have Tron in the mix at 2 cents, up 10% for the day. And if you look at our biggest losers, we got Aurora coin at 9% down for the day at 0.9%. We got 10X at 42 cents, down 8% for the day. We got Steam, poor Steam, at 37 cents, down 7% for the day. And we have Power Ledger. Gosh, do I remember Power Ledger in 2017? Oh, man. At down 5% today at 10 cents. And finally, and our fifth biggest loser of the day is Augur. Poor Augur. $16.55, down 5% as well. And finally, our Bitcoin dominance is at 52%. Not bad. All right. With that, let's get on to the end of the show.
She was just 17. Look.
a great episode this was. I think finally getting into the rhythm of Thriller News. I like it. I'm feeling better about it. You know, it's very true. It's very true. And I don't say this often, but liars do rule the world in a strange way. I don't know. You tell me. Let me know. Send me your comments. I want to hear them. Ultimately, we can only do one thing, and that's progress and move further. If we band together, we can decentralize this whole motherfucker. Bye, Bitcoin. Save the world. See you tomorrow.
This is the end of the show. You have been listening to Thriller Podcast with Bar Gonzalez. Remember, Thriller Podcast is not financial advice. Everything Carr said likely won't come true. It is up to you. Now go, do your own research. Listen to other dudes that start their name with crypto, and not Carr. And remember, buy Bitcoin and save the world. One Satoshi at a time.